We all belong outside. We're drawn to nature. Whether it's the recorded sounds of the ocean we doze off to, or the succulents that adorn our homes, nature makes all of our lives, well, better. Despite all this, we often go about our busy lives removed from it. But the outdoors is closer than we realize. With AllTrails, you can discover trails nearby and explore confidently. With offline maps and on-trail navigation, download the free app today and make the most of your summer with AllTrails.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
All edition, he is on X at Kyron Samuels. He joins the program now. Kyron, what's happening, man?
What's happening, man? Always happy to come on and talk some ball, man.
Yes, sir. We have SEC Media Days rolling along right now, too. We're getting close, man. We're getting, like, dangerously close to football season, and I'm loving every second of it.
Yeah, man, especially when this rolls around, you know you're getting close, especially if you play. You know, the training camp's literally right around the corner. You got a couple weeks to get in training camp. Probably that last big conditioning test is coming from next week. So you're right in the thick of it.
Yep, yeah. What was your conditioning test at Jacksonville State, curiously?
We had the 110 test. So we get it would increase every year. So my year, we were up to 2110. So we did 2110s my second senior year. Because I ended up getting a fifth year. But we did 2110s time. I believe the offensive lineman, we had 18 seconds. Field group had 16 seconds. So it was
a brutal
gap for the offensive lineman. I mean, that's not too much different from the small guy.
Yeah, we would do 60-55s across the field. That's all good. That's fine for me. That was my first conditioning test when Norvell and Josh Storms, the new strength and conditioning coach, came in. It was super gassers. You go 100 back, 50 back, 25 back. We had to do four of those timed. I never made them. Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. The 55s I would make pretty easily. Those were impossible.
Yeah, that's pretty brutal. I can't even lie. That's tougher than what we did.
Yeah, for sure. Now, let's hop into SEC Media Days. I want to talk about Alabama because you're very entrenched in that sort of culture and understanding what is expected of coaches and players in that state. What'd you think of Kalen DeBoer yesterday when he stepped up to the mic for the first time at SEC Media Days? It's kind of wild to think about it because only a few years ago he was at Fresno State with Mountain West Media Days. Pac-12 Media Days, not the same thing. He was at Sioux Falls not too long ago. We get all of that. I thought he handled it in stride. What'd you think?
Yeah, it was pretty surreal to see somebody other than Coach Saban there, even though Coach Saban was there as a media guy, as an analyst on the SEC desk. But I thought he handled it with extreme poise. I mean, that's just what you hear from Kalen DeBoer all the time. Anybody who ever talks about him, anytime you ever see him, he looks under control, poised. The moment never looks too big. So he handled it in stride. I mean, it was kind of cool to see a little bit of his humorous side because
right. He's
telling a couple jokes up there. I mean, he was talking about how the legend grows that he did everything when he was at Sioux Falls, like driving the bus and filling the Gatorade pool. And he was like, I actually never did any of that, guys. The legend just grows over time. So it was cool to see him up there comfortable enough to crack some jokes, answering the questions in stride, not shying away from why he took the job in the first place. And that's just because he believes in the infrastructure of a place like the University of Alabama. And kind of how he likened it to the small town feel of being in Sioux Falls. He said it's the closest he's ever felt to being at home when he's away from home. So it was interesting to see him get up there and kind of tell a little bit about his story, show some humor, and tell you, like, hey, we're going to be a pretty good football team too.
Isn't it kind of strange, like, the one conversation, which I don't think should be a conversation about him heading into the season. It's not about the talent on the team necessarily. I guess people have questions about you know, the steps forward they'll take offensively. Are they going to take a step back defensively? The whole thing. I think they'll be good in the trenches. But it was less about the players and who's going to be on the field and more about how he's running the program since Nick Saban left. Malachi Moore had to take questions about, you know, what has changed. He said, well, we have morning practices and we have more visitors and we have music out there. And I think that we've talked about this earlier in the offseason. It's rubbing some Alabama fans the wrong way because I think there's too much comparison to Saban. And I said this yesterday and I stand by this. If you want to hold him to that standard, I think you're losing before you start his tenure.
Yeah, I 100% agree. One more funny thing. He was like, Malachi was asked some of the differences between Saban and DeBoer, and he was like, I knew what Coach Saban was going to wear to practice every day. He always wore the straw hat and the khaki shorts and a vest. He's like, Kalen DeBoer wears the Alabama t-shirt, an Alabama ball cap, and Alabama shorts. He's like, everybody's out there wearing that. Sometimes it's hard to know that he's right there. He said he was at practice one time, and DeBoer was standing right next to him, and it took him a minute before he even realized that it was him, the head coach, standing next to him. So that was funny, but I do agree with what you're saying. There's never going to be another Nick Saban, and he said that verbatim yesterday, and I thought that was really cool. He was like, there's never going to be another Nick Saban. He's the greatest coach to coach college football. He said, you know, but I do things my way, and I listen to the players. I'm going to uphold the Alabama standard that's been here before me, and I'm going to slowly implement the things that I've done that have made me successful as a coach. And I think that you're kind of even seeing some of that happen already. One of the biggest questions was recruiting, right? Nick Saban's obviously – his history of recruiting is the best ever. Kirby Smart's doing some incredible things with recruiting. Alabama, per On3, has the number one recruiting class in the country for the 2025 class. So you're seeing, even though it's a little bit different, I mean, you're seeing these Alabama's finally having the big block letters that the recruits take pictures in front of on the home field now. You see a little stuff like that that's different, but it's kind of yielding the same results because they're getting the players still. And I think that's the first indicator that, hey, it might be a little different from what Saban did, but if you give him a chance to implement his own happenings, his own style, it can be the same. So obviously that has to translate to the field, but the first thing is the first thing, and that was the first test that he passed.
Yeah, now what do you think about where they'll finish in the SEC? I'd imagine still high. I know that Nick Saban the other day, now that he's on SEC Network, he's going to be on College Game Day doing all these things, he said it'll be Texas and Georgia in the SEC championship. So he's not believing Alabama's going to get to the SEC championship. But where do you think they'll finish? Like what spot do you think they will hold by the end of the season?
You know, it's an interesting conversation because I think that they're going to finish no less than 10-2. I think that's the I don't want to say the ground floor because we don't know. I mean, there's so many unanswered questions until this team really gets on the field. But I think they're more than talented enough with the offensive talent that they have. The offensive line should be improved. I think they finished no less than 10-2, so I'm going to go 10-2 with them, and they finish. The real question is what 10-2 is going to get you now in the SEC. Maybe you could have gotten to Atlanta with that before. Maybe 11-1 was the bar. But with the expanded, with no divisions, in the SEC now, you're going to have maybe to go undefeated, maybe to go 11-1 to be able to get to Atlanta. So, for me, I think they'll go 10-2 and finish somewhere around third or fourth, but make the playoff, and then all bets are off once they get to the playoff.
Yep. Now I threw out my top five finishers in the SEC on Monday when we had SEC Media Day start, and I'll go ahead and go through that. I had Georgia, then I had Texas, then I had Alabama at 3, Ole Miss 4, and I threw an LSU at 5 because I think it's going to be an interesting spot right there at number 5. Who's actually going to get through? I think there's a group of Ole Miss, Tennessee, LSU, Missouri who can all finish in that spot. What do you think about that list, and what do you have? Because I know that you're going to publish sort of your order of finishes today.
So, yeah, I have Georgia number 1. I have Alabama number 2. Texas number 3. Ole Miss number 4. And Tennessee number 5.
Okay.
I think Tennessee is the sleeper team here. People are kind of forgetting about them a little bit, but they are as talented as any of those on the cusp teams. You know, we know how talented Georgia, Alabama, Texas, and Ole Miss are. But I think when you talk about the rest of the SEC, you know, LSU tends to come up. Missouri tends to come up. But I think that Tennessee, with the collection of talent they have, especially in the trenches, they are extremely experienced in the trenches, one of the better offensive lines in the SEC. They have their quarterback with Young Nico. They have wide receivers in Squirrel Wright. I mean, they have the ingredients to be a great team, and they have some dynamic defensive players. You have James Pierce Jr., who some people believe is the best defensive player in the country. He's, you know, some of the on some draft boards, he's the number one defensive player, period. So you have high-end talent on defense as well. And I think they have a good collection of young and old. And Heupel is, you know, for whatever you want to say about the guy, I know a lot of people have, you know, questions about the offense. The offense scores points. I mean, he's proven that he can score points in the SEC. They're coming off of a couple of back-to-back really good seasons. And I think that they're experienced enough. Heupel is experienced enough now. They have the talent, especially the young quarterback talent. They're going to shock some people. I wouldn't be shocked to see them go 10-2 and finish in a great spot and beat a couple teams that people maybe don't think they're going
to
beat.
See, I'm glad you put Ole Miss and Tennessee right next to each other at 4-5, just because I know people are getting tired of this question from me. I've been asking it all week covering SEC Media Days. But when it comes to Ole Miss and Tennessee, it's all about catching that off or that defense up with the offense, right? Yeah. Usually those two squads, you know that they're going to put points up on the board, but it's about bridging that gap. Defensively, I think they have some talent, but even with the talent, the SEC bodies they've had in the past, they haven't been able to do that because I think there's a little bit too much pace on the offensive side. The defensive side spends a little bit too much time on the field. So you seem confident that those two particular programs will be able to bridge that gap.
Yeah, I think with Ole Miss, let's talk about those guys first. The talent that they were able to acquire in the transfer portal was pretty impressive. I mean, they go out and get a Walter Nolan from Texas A&M. You go out and get a guy like Trey Amos to help bolster the secondary, who was formerly Louisiana Lafayette, ended up starting at the end of the year for Alabama last year and made some really big plays in that SEC championship. You'll get a guy like that. They even got a guy from Jacksonville State by the name of Chris Hardy. He's a defensive end who got a lot of people know right now, but he's the guy that went and led the Conference USA in tackles for loss last year. Two-time first-team all-conference. So he's a guy that can help get after the pass rusher, along with Princely. I can't pronounce
his name. Yeah, exactly. I do the exact same thing, Kai. I swear I've done it all week.
But a guy from Florida who was projected to be a top 50 pick in the NFL draft last season at the defensive end position. So they bolstered the pass rush. They got some interior help on the interior defensive line. And they went and got some secondary help. And those aren't even all the guys. I just named the guys that are notable and the guys like Chris Hardy, who I believe people should go research and catch up on because he's a guy that is immensely talented and is going to help them out. And Tennessee is just experienced at the defensive side of the ball now. They haven't had the best defense over the last couple of years. They've been a bend-don't-break, kind of hold you under 25, and that's kind of been their threshold. If you can hold them under 25 points, their offense is usually good enough to come out on the other end of that. So I think they won't be too dissimilar from that. I just think they're a little bit more experienced. The talent is a little bit more high-end, especially with a guy like James Pierce Jr. If he can stay healthy, he has the ability for them single-handedly wreck games. So I think their pass rush is going to be big for them. They're getting some experience back on the interior of the defense with their linebackers that were injured last season. So I think they're not going to be a great defense by any means, Tennessee that is. But I think they're good enough now, experienced enough, and they have enough high-end talent. So where they can stay in games, and their offense may be good enough to win those games.
Yeah, and I'll say this about Tennessee. I'm a big believer in Nico. I thought he played well against Iowa, against a good defense last year. They didn't really need him to use his arm all that much, but he didn't make mistakes. And I think for a young quarterback, that's the first step into becoming an elite quarterback at this level, right?
100%. Another interesting thing, you know, we saw him use his legs, which was not what we've heard from him. I mean, we've always heard that. And he did look good when he had to throw the ball, like you said. But the added dimension of him being able to run the ball like that, against a very good defense, by the way. I was an extremely good defense. So you got a dynamic player there, quarterback. Everybody's raised about how mature he was. The guys that were there representing Tennessee at SEC Media Days and Josh Heupel all talked about how mature he is for a guy that young. So when you have a guy that not only has the talent, but he sounds like he's doing the right things, and the guys in the locker room and the coaches that believe in him, they're on the right track, and I think that this shouldn't be surprising because he was one of the highest recruits of the last couple of years. So it sounds like everything's going right to plan for them at the quarterback position.
All right, now hot seat talk. This is what I want to get into. We have Coach Sam Pittman. He spoke today, and he said, you know, like he leans into it. Like he doesn't shy away from it. And I thought it was interesting what he said, how quick things can change. He was a top six finisher and coach of the year a couple of years ago when they went 9-4. But now, after last year, he is probably on the hottest seat in the country. But you also have Clark Lee at Vandy, who's on the hot seat, and Billy Napier, who has the toughest schedule probably in the country. Talked with David Cobb from CBS Sports about this yesterday, but their last 7 weeks, it's absolutely ridiculous. They play, according to CBS Sports and Dennis Dodds, post-spring, top 25. They have 8 different top 25 matchups that they will have to deal with this year. But of those three guys, do you think we're going to have turnover at all three programs this year? Because it sort of seems that way to me, just looking at schedules and how things may play out.
You know, I think for sure we get turnover at Florida and at Arkansas. I think where they finish, regardless if it's a little bit better than what people might expect, I think that those programs are too hell-bent on being very good, very
right.
successful, especially in the NIL era. I think those two programs, if those guys aren't able to go 8-4-ish and give you and have some really nice wins on the recruiting trail and give you hope that they're going to continue that through the future, I think those are the two teams and the two schools that are probably going to have the turnover. Clark Lee's an interesting situation because where do you go from there if you're Vanderbilt?
Yeah, it's still Vandy at the end of the day. It's sort of what if right. I'm reading the message there.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that's not it's a fantastic institution in terms of academics, right? But that's also something that can hold you back in terms of football recruiting. They have money, but do they have the money to compete with a Georgia and an Alabama and a Texas and Oklahoma now? I'm not sure that they do. So they're in an interesting spot because they may need a leadership change, but where do you go from there? Who's realistically going to be the person that comes in and overhauls the program enough to where you can compete, even if that's even the goal there? So they're an interesting situation. And I want to throw another one out there that nobody's really talking about, but I wrote about it. Shane Beamer's in a weird situation. He can't have another bad year. I don't think he can have another 5-7 type, 6-6 type season, especially with the resources that they're pouring into that program now. South Carolina is a proud fan base. I don't think people realize how proud that fan base is, how much people care about winning up there. He's a guy that is in a very interesting spot to me because if he has another 5-7, 6-6 type season, I don't know if the season's going to be, you know, in flames, but there's definitely going to be some conversations about it, especially with the 12-team playoff. Everybody believes that they have enough to get there now. So, and that's how they should feel. I believe with the 12-team expanded playoff, I mean, look, they got hot at the end of 2022, ended up going 8-4. Who knows? With the new playoff system, depending on other teams' losses and other conferences, that could have been good enough to get into the playoff one year. Who knows? So we'll see there. I'm really interested to see how South Carolina does this year because they have a lot of people around the program that are very excited. They're saying this is the best they've worked in a long time, the most continuity they've had in a long time. So I'm interested to see that play out on the field because I think the expectations are extremely high for Shane Beamer.
Now, talking with Kyren Samuels, at Kyren Samuels on X, who's the most overrated team in the SEC going into this year? And it could be one of the top-tier teams that you don't necessarily think is going to be where everybody expects them to be. But who do you think is the most overrated team heading into this year?
For me, it's no question the Texas Longhorns. I know how dynamic they are on offense. They have a ton of offensive talent. Scoring points is not going to be a problem for them. Steve Sarkisian is arguably the best play caller in the country. You have Quinn Ewers there, quarterback returning. They get Isaiah Bond from Alabama to replace some of those receivers that they lost, and Eddie Mitchell, Xavier Worthy, Jordan Northingham. So they lost their top three receivers and their tight end, Jatavion Sanders. So I don't think people realize how much they're replacing from the skill group, but they went out and got Isaiah Bond from Alabama. They went out and got Silas Bolden from Oregon State, I believe. Yes, Oregon State. They went out and got Martin Knobloch, a tight end from Alabama. So they're replacing the production with productive people, proven productive people. But I don't think that offense is their issue. I think the defensive side of the ball is the issue. Their defensive backs are, I don't want to just dog them, but they're not very good at this point. Mm-hmm. They weren't extremely good last year. They're not very good right now. They don't have a ton of pass rush up front. Their team that I'm concerned about is not going to be able to stop people. So I think especially when you get into the thick of the season, the SEC schedule, I know everybody likes to talk about it, but it's the truth. You know, they had some very tough games last year. The Houston game went down to the wire. Kansas State game went down to the wire. So if I'm just basing that off of history, those type of teams are going to be in the SEC every week. That's pretty much the bottom of the barrel that you're going to get when you're playing in the SEC. So am I 100% certain that they can hold up over the course of a 12-game SEC regular season and then another 3-4 games in the playoffs? I'm not sure that Texas is that team. I think they're going to score a ton of points and give up a ton of points, and they're going to have to play turnover-free football and force a lot of turnovers to win, and that's not a recipe for success over the course of a long season.
And what blows my mind, and I had to get sort of introduced to this thought this week, they really, in the Big 12, yeah, they had true road games, But we're talking about Kansas State and Kansas and schools like that. Their one game against like very good competition every single year would seemingly be against Texas in the Cotton Bowl. It would be a neutral site game. They're not used to going on the road in environments like they'll see in the SEC. I mean, that's the truth of it. Now, they did it at Alabama, and they went and won. And I give them a lot of credit for that. But at the same time, they have not been used to doing that every single week. And that is something that is probably at the top of the list of issues when you're talking about going into the SEC and being a new member.
Absolutely. And they've done themselves no favors with making a big deal about this horns down thing.
Oh, yeah.
Now they're going to get it double time. When they go on the road now, everybody's going to be, they were going to do it anyway, but now you just added fuel to the fire. People are going to be doing the horns down thing. They're going to be wanting to beat Texas because, you know, everybody already wants to beat Texas. It's one of the most recognizable brands in the country, right? But now Texas is kind of feeling themselves. They had a good bounce back year. They made it to the college football playoff. Like you said, they went on the road and beat Alabama week three last season. So it was a very interesting, it's a very interesting dynamic because they're kind of like the upstart that has, you know, too much on their plate, but they have so much history at the same time. So it's going to be interesting to see how fans react to it in the SEC, and I believe that fans are going to try to go over the top to prove a point to Texas. And like you said, it's going to play into the difficulty of their schedule over the course of the season.
Now, we talked most overrated, most underrated. I think if I'm reading through your list of finishers, I think Tennessee could be at the top of that list. But who do you think is the most underrated team in the SEC heading into this year that could surprise some folks?
I think Alabama is the most underrated team in the SEC right now. I think Tennessee is, if we're going, you know, probably for – the quality of the word underrated. I mean, yes, people expect Alabama to be good, but I don't think people realize how good this Alabama team can be. I don't think they have many holes besides experience in the defensive backfield. And even then, they went out and picked up some experienced players like a Damani Jackson from USC, a former five-star cornerback who was recruited by Nick Saban initially. Everybody thought he was going to go to Alabama, ended up going to USC, transfers to Alabama after the USC season. They went out and got some nice additions. They picked up a defensive back from Penn State, King Mack. They went up and picked up Deshaun Jones from Wake Forest, who had a very productive year last season. And then you mix that with the young talent they have coming in, Xavier Brown, who's a four or five-star, depending on the recruiting service, cornerback. Red Morgan, who is a four-star from Alabama, Central Phoenix City, who people rave about. I mean, I'm hearing Brian Branch type comparisons from this kid. So that's high esteem from the players that are there, from Malachi Moore himself, who has said that. And then you have Malachi Moore himself. So I think that's the biggest question mark for them. Nobody has questions about the linebacker units with Deontay Lawson and Jahad Campbell. Nobody has questions about the defensive line unit. You have arguably the most experienced interior defensive line group in the country and some very good young rushers. So I think they're going to be good. It's going to be very different for the style that they're playing. With Kane Womack and that kind of, you know, three-man down front defense, he's going to be having a lot of guys around the line of scrimmage. So it's going to be different. But I think Alabama offensively is going to be explosive. Kalen DeBoer has already proven that he's one of the best offensive minds of the ball. And then you have Jalen Milroe and his dynamic ability. The offensive line, like I said, is going to be retooled. You bring back Tyler Booker and Jaden Roberts, who are the best guard duos in the country.
Yep.
And then you add Parker Brailsford, who is an All-American center, transferred over from the University of Washington. And then you get Caden Proctor back in one of the most crazy transfer portal stories we have with him transferring to Iowa for a couple months, then coming back to Alabama. So they're going to be experienced up front. And then they still have some dynamic running backs. You have J.M. Miller, Justice Hayes, Richard Young, who are not household names at this point. But I'm telling you, these guys are athletic, they're dynamic, and they're going to run the ball a lot more than people realize. Kalen DeBoer, for all that he's known for, he ran the ball. They've had a 1,000-yard rusher two out of the last three seasons, and his offenses, he's going to be able to establish a run, especially with those dynamic backs. So I think people are expecting Alabama to either be 8-4, fall off, which is crazy. That's considered a fall off, but that's the truth. Or maybe they run the table. People still believe Alabama's Alabama. And I think somewhere in between there, they're kind of underrated for how talented they are and how good of a coach Kalen DeBoer has proven to be already, even though there's going to be a learning curve. I believe that Alabama is the most underrated team, and I believe they can go 11-1, 12-0 at peak at high end. I think they can run that table. But I would have them attend to just being prudent, just for being having a little bit of foresight here. I think they might struggle a little bit and have an off game here or there. But I think by the end of the season, nobody's going to want to play those guys.
All right, now 12-team playoff is going to be a new wrinkle in this year. college football season. But how many teams do you think the SEC is going to have? I think without a doubt, three. I think most people would probably put it at that four range. There is a very outside possibility that they could get more than that, though.
You know, I think for the sake of being fair, I'm going to cap it at four.
Okay.
I think four is already a lot. I mean, you're going to get – I mean, listen, that's a ton of teams to get in already. I mean, it's basically the SEC Invitational was the four-team playoff. I mean, the four-team playoff, I believe an SEC team won 12 out of those years, if I'm not mistaken,
right.
Or at least made it to it. I mean, there's only been one time there wasn't an SEC team, period, and that was last season. So, in the first year with Oregon and Ohio State. So it's interesting to see that dynamic. But I think they're going to get four teams, and you'll have like three teams that are hovering right outside of that on the bubble type deal. So I'm going to give some respect to the Big Ten. The Big Ten has a ton of teams that can make the playoff, I believe. People are sleeping on Michigan. I think that defense is going to be absolutely absurd. And Sherrone Moore is the architect of the offense. They could surprise some people and kind of sneak them into that 10-2 range. Oregon, Ohio State, I'm going to respect those guys. Maybe a Wisconsin that sneaks up on people this year.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of teams that are very good in those conferences. Then you got the Big 12. I think people are kind of sleeping on the Big 12. A Utah team, I believe if they can peak and stay healthy, that's a team that should be able to make the playoffs. And then obviously you have the G5 teams like a Liberty. I think you can't count out the best G5 champion, and that'll probably be Liberty or maybe a Memphis. I mean, who knows? It could be Memphis this year
with their loaded
talent on offense. And a sleeper pick for me, I'll just throw out there, is Boise State. I think Boise State is a team that could potentially make the playoff. So just answering the question, I think there's too many other teams out there that are going to run the table in their conferences or a little bit better than what their conferences are. That'll get those at-large bids just out of respect for their conference, as opposed to just throwing an SEC team in there. I don't think we're going to get that year one.
Yeah, now final thing, off the topic of actual on-the-field play, we have some realignment discussion to have with Florida State. Florida State's in pending litigation with the ACC. They want to get out of that grant of rights potentially and get somewhere else. They feel like they're not getting equitable treatment from the ACC because they feel like they bring more eyes to that conference than anybody else, and they want more money because of that. But now they're trying to get out, and we've seen reports all week about the SEC not being interested in the slightest. And now you have Greg Sankey just straight up saying, we're not going to take our pie and slice it into more pieces. We're not going to bring in Florida State, at least right this second. And it doesn't sound like going into the future he's all that high on the idea of bringing in Florida State. It is an interesting reality for Florida State that they're going to have to face here shortly. If they do win in this litigation, find a way out, it feels like their only landing spot at this moment. I mean, if they get out anytime soon, is the Big 12, right? It doesn't seem like anybody else. Like, you want to get out of the ACC to get to the Big 10, to get to the SEC, because of the amount of money they make off their TV media rights deal. But it doesn't seem like either of those conferences are even willing to approach that idea right now.
Yeah, I mean, Greg Sankey has made it very clear, at least at this stage, we all know how things can change and how fast things can change. But
of course,
he's like, 16 teams was what he wanted. That was the number that he wanted, and he got it. I mean, you add a Texas and Oklahoma they were already the standard in college football. And then you add two of the biggest programs, not just college football, but Oklahoma's athletic department and Texas athletic department. You can make a case Texas has the best athletic department in terms of production on the field, top to bottom. Out of anybody in the country, I mean, they have a very good national volleyball team, a very good national softball team. They have incredible track and field. Oklahoma has the best softball team, has good baseball. They have other sports that they're, you know, extremely good at. So they add so much value. I'm not sure that Florida State has more value than those two teams. So I can see why, Greg Sankey feels the way he does, 16 as a team. The one I'm interested in is the Big Ten. I mean, I think that would have been an interesting dynamic to see Florida State maybe potentially go there. But I think Florida State's issue was waiting too long. I mean, when you saw everybody else making their moves, it should have been, hey, maybe we need to acquiesce a little bit here. Maybe we need to do whatever we need to do to find a way to facilitate a deal, because everybody's moving on. The ACC is even trying to, you know, add teams. They added SMU and Cal. We can't sit here on our fingers and rest on our laurels because we're Florida State here. Now they're in a position where even if they get out, like you said, there doesn't seem to be many landing spots.
Right.
And the Big 12 is not the most desirable landing spot in that situation in the first place. So they're in a precarious situation here, and I'm interested to see how it plays out, because Florida State is a historically – I mean, would you consider them a blue blood? I think I would.
Yep, I would.
I would consider them a blue blood. So to see a blue blood in this type of situation is a little interesting. And I'm wondering how they're going to figure it out and the speed in which they figure it out, because I think time is of the importance here.
And what I just find ironic, just generally speaking, and this is the last thing I'll sort of throw your way. What I find ironic is they feel like they're being treated like a regular fish in a pond that they seemingly own in the ACC. If they get out and try to get to the SEC or Big Ten, they're going to be treated like a small fish, because they are right on par with a lot of the middle tier programs in those conferences. That's sort of what they would be in those conferences. They'd be a small fish.
And that's the hard truth that I think a lot of people in that area don't want to hear. When you become, let's say they do go, SEC changed their mind, Greg Sankey lets them in, I would put them in the Tennessee, Oklahoma range there. They're not the elite of the group. They're not the bottom of the barrel, but they're somewhere around the
middle. We still give them respect, but they're still middle tier. They're not at the top of that conference like they have been with the ACC for a while.
No questions about that. So I think that that's something that they need to accept and kind of realize here, that this isn't the Florida State of the 90s and early 2000s. Yes, they're back on the uptick. They're having a little bit more success of recent. But not too long ago, they were losing games to Jacksonville State on their home field. That's 2 years ago.
I know you remember
that. Not
that
long ago. Oh, man, listen, one of the best days ever. But it's not too long ago that you were losing games to Jacksonville State on your home field. You did bounce back. Norvell's done a very good job there recruiting and establishing a culture there. But let's say they pick that up and move that to the Big Ten or the SEC. Like we both said, it's middle tier of the solid team and not high end or the top like you've been used to being.
Yep, no question about it. Well, Kyron, I appreciate it, man. Thanks for hopping on. We'll do it again soon.
No problem, man. Thank you.
Yes, sir. That's Kyron Samuels. At Kyron Samuels on X. Make sure you go follow his Substack. That's The Pulling Guard. Check out the work that he facilitates, Defiant Takes, for their football edition. And always remember that this is an old lineman talking to an old lineman, former Jacksonville State All-Conference offensive lineman.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Blinds.com's Labor Day Mega Sale starts now. Take the labor out of shopping for custom window treatments and make upgrading your home easy and affordable. Don't miss out on up to 50% off right now at Blinds.com. Blinds.com is the better way to shop for custom window treatments. 100% online with upfront pricing and free shipping. No showroom markups. No pushy salespeople in your home. Blinds.com's design experts can help you make the perfect choices with free virtual consultations. Plus, they'll send samples right to your door fast and free. Blinds.com can even handle the measure and installation for you. Unlimited window treatments installed for one low cost. Since 1996, customers have trusted Blinds.com to cover over 25 million windows, all backed by their 100% satisfaction guarantee. Take the labor out of upgrading your home with Blinds.com's Labor Day Mega Sale happening now. Save up to 50%, plus premium doorbusters. Up to 50% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly!
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything, and that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.